You're listening to WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. Man, I'm excited to be back with you guys. Last week, I didn't come with a new show. I was visiting the beautiful metropolis that is Mexico City. Now, this might be my American ignorance, but I did not expect Mexico City to be such a beautiful place. I mean, there's people out there just getting up, doing that thing, working hard, having fun. No different than how we are here in New York City or L.A. or any of the great cities in America. Man, that was truly eye-opening. Shout out to the great people of Mexico City. Shout out to my man, Barrow Reedy, for having me, for showing me around, making sure I didn't get myself in too much trouble. But we back at it, man. Let's get back to business. A lot of things have taken place. The NFL draft is in the books. NBA playoffs, of course. We finally are into the second round. It took some teams 7 games to get out of the first round, including the great LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I told you I've been critical of LeBron. I thought at times he doesn't do enough. Now, I know you guys want to throw stats at me, but it's never about a stat. If I sit down and watch a game for 2.5 hours, if I sit down and watch a game for 48 minutes, and to justify to me that he had a good game, you have to run to the stat sheet, then that's wrong. While I'm sitting down watching the game, I should be able to say, oh, snap, that boy is taking care of business. Somebody that is just walking past the screen, doesn't know what's going on, doesn't know anything about sports, should be able to look at the TV and say, dang, that dude is the best player on the court. And LeBron James hasn't always given us that. But game 7, especially early on, he wore that crown as best player in the league. And it came from just being aggressive from the tip. Too many times I think LeBron James has the ball in his hand and he's dribbling. He's not being productive. But in game 7, every time he caught the rock, it seemed like he made up his mind already. I'm taking a shot, or I'm going to cut to the basket. There was no indecisiveness. And another thing with LeBron, he is the most skilled offensive player on his team. Why is he initiating offense for guys who have an inferior skill set than him? LeBron, you need to be on the finishing end of a lot of this stuff. And in game 7, he was. You shouldn't rebound the ball and dribble it up and let's see if we could get. No, bro. You should be the impetus for everything that goes on for the Cavs. You should be in the middle of it all. You should be in the post. If you catch it, you make a strong move to the rim. If you kick out to one of your shooters, that's great. But again, it all starts with you in the middle being aggressive. And that's what we got. Game 7, man. The man came out with 45 points. But again, it's not even about the stats. It's about when you sit back and watch, you say, oh, okay. Okay, I see a difference now. Now, LeBron has scored 40 two other times in that series. But again, Game 7 was different to me, at least in my humble opinion. That was the first time the Pacers should have double-teamed him. The Pacers weren't expecting that version of LeBron. They hadn't double-teamed him all series. But his Game 7 aggressiveness warranted a double-team. I want to go to that fourth quarter. See, a lot of times they talk about LeBron not having enough talent on his team. I do not agree with that. Yes, LeBron, you are the best player. But like they said on the Turner broadcast, you have to empower the guys around you. You have to give them the green light. Yo, Jordan Clarkson, go ahead and make a one-on-one move. Whether you make or miss, it's okay. We'll live with the results. And if anybody disagrees with me and says, well, LeBron's not playing with anybody, I would take you back to the fourth quarter. The beginning of the fourth quarter when LeBron went to the locker room for some injuries. Then he finally came out and he sat on the bench. Yo, while LeBron was out of the game, his teammates, those guys that are not capable of doing anything without him, they were able to extend the lead to 10 points without LeBron's presence on the court. So don't tell me he doesn't have guys around him. There is enough there, at least to get through the Eastern Conference. He just has to empower them. Yo, Rodney Hood, go out there and make a play. Don't be afraid to make a mistake. Jordan Clarkson, go make a play. But every time they touch the ball, LeBron's behind him, clapping his hand. Yo, right here, right here. No. If you see freaking George Hill grab the rebound, LeBron, get out on the break. You be the finisher. So I thought they figured some things out there in that game seven. Hopefully that'll be able to carry them through the East. George Hill played great coming off the bench, 11 points. But even with LeBron's great performance, the Cavaliers were still within striking distance. Forgive me, the Pacers were still within striking distance. What I thought was the difference in the game, and this frustrates me about all of professional basketball, the only difference was the Pacers were on the road. They seemed a little rattled. They seemed a little discombobulated. See, in the previous game, when it was a home game for the Pacers, everybody was calm, cool, collected. Everybody seemed comfortable in their role. But not so much on the road. See, in Indiana, when they double-teamed Victor Oladipo, it was almost like the Pacers said, okay, we got him now. Victor Oladipo was nice and calm. He saw the double-team come, and then he started boom, 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 picking off his teammates. Okay, that guy's open. Pass here, layup. That guy's open. Jump shot. But they weren't able to get that done in Cleveland. I mean, it's not like it was something they hadn't seen before. You've seen the double-team before. But for whatever reason, they seemed to be a little bit rattled. Like, guys were running into each other. Guys were missing passes. Lance Stephenson came off the bench and caught two early fouls. Game 7, Nate McMillan couldn't even go back to him because he couldn't trust him. He seemed to be a little bit out of control. And I attribute that to being on the road. And I don't understand why the road is such a big deal in professional basketball. See, growing up in the hood, I understand when you go play in a rival neighborhood. When you're in high school, I understand going to play in a different school. When you're in college, I understand going on the road, that can be a big difference. Because you know what? You're playing in a gymnasium you've never been in. You're in front of people you've never seen. You might have just got off a 3-hour bus that was uncomfortable. Shoot, in the hood, you go to another neighborhood, somebody in the crowd might say, yo, if you make another basket, you're going to get hurt. You know, that'd affect your game, right? But in professional basketball, you guys been in these stadiums time and time again. You guys stayed in this hotel time and time again. You came on a private jet. You had a chance to eat a 5-star meal. Shoot, you probably even got groupies in that city that you deal with already. Why is it such a big deal? Why is such a big difference when on the road and at home? But I guess that's human nature, man. I guess that's human nature. If people not cheering for you, I guess you don't have the energy or you weren't able to focus. I thought that was the sole difference in the Pacers losing that game as opposed to them being able to win at home in Indiana. But still, they were able to come up and stay close. But they weren't able to get it done. Pacers should be a good team for a long time, man. I look forward to seeing that team develop, especially with the Brooklyn native Lance Stephenson, the Brooklyn King Lance Stephenson, man. Hopefully he'll be a part of that young nucleus with Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo for a long time. And one other thing, yo, the media has its biases, doesn't it? During that series, LeBron James brought his team matching suits. Now, Bron, you one of the flyest, freshest dudes out there. Matching suits? I thought that was kind of lame. I mean, a suit, you got to look really, really close to even tell that, yo, they're all wearing the same. So to put that together, I thought that was lame. But the media says, yo, that's leadership. But I'll take you back to when NFL player J.J. Watt, member of the Houston Texans, when he got his team Letterman jackets, I think it was for a big Monday night matchup against the New England Patriots. People called it juvenile, called it corny. Oh, that's high school stuff. This is the big leagues, J.J. Watt. What were you thinking? I thought the jackets would kind of fly. Way better than the suit. But since J.J. Watt is not a champion like LeBron, the media spins it as the suits are cool and the jackets are corny. Man, get out of here with that stuff. Listening to WBH Radio, it's your boy William Holly. Please hit me up on Twitter at WBH Radio. Another team that made it to the second round is the Utah Jazz. They were able to topple the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, man, that's really bad. Utah Jazz were great. Let's give them their credit. Donovan Mitchell, that ragtag bunch of hungry guys, that was amazing. But let's be real. The story is about OKC's failures. The story is about OKC underachieving. Anytime you put together talent like Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, you should be able to accomplish great things, not go home in the first round. So let's try to unpack this. First and foremost, Russell Westbrook, I think it begins and ends with you. And if I had the privilege to talk to Russell Westbrook, I think he'd agree. You are the MVP of this league. You are the person that has played in the NBA Finals. You are the one with the ball in your hand most of the time. With the talent around you, you should be able to just roll the ball out and come up with victories. Now, in that final game of the series, Russell Westbrook scored, he attempted 43 shots. Now, basketball's been playing for 100 years. That's a pretty large sample size, right? We've never seen a team be successful with this point guard shooting 43 shots. I don't care who you're talking about. Magic Johnson? Nope. Bob Cousy? Steve Nash? Like, whatever point guard you want to point, Isaiah Thomas? That recipe is not going to get it done, Russell Westbrook. Sometimes it's embarrassing to see you with the ball just running around in circles like a chicken with your head cut off. You got to learn how to pick your spots. And the number of great players that have played with Russell Westbrook is starting to mount up. We got James Harden. We got Kevin Durant. We got Paul George. We got Carmelo. And after that great series we just saw, with the Cavs versus the Pacers, you got to add Victor Oladipo to that list. A number of people that have played with Russell Westbrook, and when they stand next to him, they seem to be neutered. Russ, all of those players, and not only all of those players, but they came to small town USA, OKC. Shoot, the Lakers wish they could have just one of those talents. And you played with all of them? Not to mention the great complimentary pieces like Serge Ibaka, like Enes Kanter, who's now in New York City, a freaking double-double machine, and Steven Adams. So, Russ, you had that talent. The organization has paid you. And you still not getting it done, bro? Like that Puff Daddy song, "What We Gonna Do Now?" It's all fucked up now. Like, damn, Russ, what else you want? So it was really frustrating to see them struggle. And to me, that's where it stops. You can say Paul George didn't perform. Yo, last season, Paul George averaged 20 points a game. You think he lost that? You think all of a sudden he forgot how to play basketball? We've seen enough people next to Russ to know that, hey, that has some effect on their game. The same with Carmelo Anthony. I love Melo, son. I was in the United States Army in Colorado Springs, Colorado, when Melo was in Denver. Watched him every night. Then I got out of the Army, came home. Before you know it, Melo was in New York. So there's probably no basketball player that I've been able to watch more than Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony has his deficiencies, for sure. For sure. I've always thought he could have been in better shape. I've always thought that he could defend a little better. I think he should be a 10-rebound-a-game guy. If you want to have that conversation with me, I'm all for it. But when it comes to that scoring, Melo's one of the best of his generation, as my man DA pointed out to me. It's him and KD, the last 10 years. Don't give me no LeBron, no D-Wade. When we talk about pure scorers, it's Melo and KD. So, Russ, you couldn't figure out a way to make Carmelo effective on the offensive end? You got the ball in your hand. You can't say, yo, you know what? The first 8 plays of the game are going to be scripted for Melo. Let's go. Let's dump it into him early. You celebrated these acquisitions at the beginning of the season, but you did nothing with them. And you know, it was really sad. Every time I saw Carmelo take a shot, it seemed rushed. It seemed like he said in his head, you know what? I'll probably never get this ball again, so let me just shoot it. It may have not even been his shot, the shot he wanted to take. But he said, dang, man, another opportunity may not come for another quarter. Here, let me just chuck this up. You can see it, man. As somebody that loves the game, you can see it. So all you guys out there, understand, oh, Melo's washed, this, that. Yo, that boy just scored 20-something points in New York last year. Russ, you didn't do right by the gentlemen that are on your team. You didn't. The ball is in your hand, Russ. It goes nowhere else but you. You dropped the ball. You let that rookie, Donovan Mitchell, who is amazing, you let him snatch an opportunity at the title. Because truth be told, OKC is the only team that I feel can honestly compete with the Golden State Warriors, who got the firepower. That's sad. But in one of my previous episodes on the radio show, I said Russell is an amazing talent. Russell has the desire to win. His competitiveness can be questioned. And when we talk about professional sports, that's really all an athlete is responsible for bringing to the table. The organization and the coaches are there to help mold that talent and help point them in the right direction. Well, the OKC Thunder have failed to do that when it comes to the leaders they put in front of him. Scottie Brooks didn't do it, and now Billy Donovan is not doing it. Billy Donovan, you can't pull your point guard aside and say, hey, man, we need to get Melo a basket. Hey, man, 43 shots is not the way to get it done. We've never seen that in NBA history. Billy, what are you doing? You have all these weapons, and the team was just clumsy and discombobulated all season. Russell Westbrook seemed to be a strong-willed individual that doesn't communicate easily. I don't care. That don't mean you don't do your job, Billy. And if Billy is not somebody that can challenge Russell Westbrook, you need to get somebody in that seat that can. Billy looking like a yes man. Yeah, Russell, whatever you want to do, man. Phil Jackson used to challenge Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant in public. Hey, we could have did better. Oh, what they did wasn't the greatest. Oh, I didn't like when they did this or that. Out of OKC, you just hear undying love for Russell. Man, that could never be the case. Nobody's always right. So OKC, the next chapter, because y'all done put talent in that ranks for years. I told you about KD and Russell and James Harden, all these people you've been able to acquire. You've done well in the talent portion. The next chapter is getting a leader, a fearless leader, somebody that can challenge Russ. I don't know who that guy is, but Kenny Smith from Turner, he just interviewed for the Knicks gig. If Kenny Smith is out there, Kenny Smith is somebody who comes on TV every week and challenges these young guys. Yet, you never hear the young guys you never hear them offended by Kenny Smith's tweets or his comments. They understand where it comes from. So Kenny Smith is an effective communicator. He's somebody that could get in there, earn Russell's trust, and still challenge him. And another candidate, I think, is UConn's former coach, Kevin Ollie. They fired him. But Kevin Ollie was a teammate of Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. He's somebody that's fearless as well, not afraid to get in somebody's face. And lastly, the OKC Thunder. You guys played basketball all season, and not once did we hear about a scuffle, a skirmish, a fight, anything coming out of that locker room. Now, some may say, well, that's good. They got along. Uh-uh. Not good. There needs to be confrontation. Somebody needs to challenge Russell on the way he plays the game. Somebody needs to challenge Russell and say, hey, Russ, I don't like what you're doing. I don't like how that went down. Russ, I need the ball more often. Russ, you need to do a better job. They never fought at all, ever. We heard the stories about the great Michael Jordan and his confrontation with Steve Kerr. We didn't see LeBron James be successful until he started getting in Chalmers' face and D-Wade getting in his face and Spoelstra getting in D-Wade's face. That's that kind of creative tension that's necessary to be great. Just look at last year when KD, his first year in Golden State, Draymond Green was in his ass. Yo, dude, I don't know what you used to, but we do things the right way here. Draymond Green, he not half the player KD is, but yo, there's a championship standard, and I'm going to get in your ass, bro. We going to play as a unit. We going to do things the right way. All we heard out of Oklahoma was, yo, Russell Westbrook, that's our guy. That's our guy. That ain't what you want, guys. I'm telling you. But appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you guys listening in. Hope everybody's having a good day, a good time. Again, you can hit me on Twitter at WBH Radio. I am recording now at the beautiful Brooklyn College. Thanks to the students here at my WBCR for allowing me to take advantage of the facilities. I want to ask you guys a question. What do you think of all of the scuffles that are taking place during the NBA playoffs? You know, we see little chest-to-chest matches after the whistle. We see a little pushing and tugging. Guys getting in each other's face. The occasional technical foul. What do you make of those situations? Now, some people may say, yeah, well, that's playoff basketball. It's tough. I would argue that it's the exact opposite. That it is actually weak and soft. Because to me, that is the equivalent of the guy in the hood who just talks a good game. You just talking. You know there's no real threat of anything happening, but you still running your mouth. To these guys with these little extra bumps and pushes and they think that's toughness, it's not. It's really just distracting. We trying to win a basketball game. This is corporate America, brother. You're not in the streets. So you pushing like you about to fight when you know damn well the stadium ain't nobody in here going to let you fight. You know damn well There's armed guards, security. You're not fighting. So we call that selling those wolf tickets. You got your chest all poked out because you know there's no threat of anything happening. Or you see your teammate over there in a little pushing match. You run over there. Yo, man, I got to get my teammate. Really, dog? It's a freaking NBA stadium. Nothing was going to happen to your teammate. I promise you. Now, if you were in a bar and it's pitch black and you see your boy over there in a skirmish, would you run over there then with the same fearlessness? Where there's a threat of a gun or a knife or a glass bottle, that's toughness to me. But during an NBA game when the world is watching, when we know damn well he ain't about to fight, that's just a punk move. You just putting on a show. So NBA players, cut that out, man. Y'all a bunch of good guys. Cut that out. All that extracurricular stuff. No. I remember when I was playing college basketball, my teammates tried to get me. I'm like, stop it. If you really tough, help me win this game. And in the handshake line, if you want to punch him in his face, I'll be right behind you. But during the course of the game, just a punk move, bro. Trust me. I just wanted to get that off my chest, man, because I'm tired of watching that little pushing matches. But Monday night, that was a good game. The Boston Celtics versus the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, that's going to be a good series. And trust me, I first guessed that. I think it's a team in the Philadelphia 76ers who have two phenomenal players, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, versus a squad of scrappy dudes. Two mega talents versus a full squad. Man, the Boston Celtics are doing something phenomenal. They lost Kyrie Irving. Still made it through the first round. Then they lost Jaylen Brown, somebody that has emerged as one of their best players. They lost him, and they still were able to win that game. Now, you know I love the players. They the one that get out there and get on the floor. But when you have something like that happen, I got no choice but to credit the organization. And not just for the talent that is around there, but for the attitude that the team carries. For guys to come off the bench and contribute, that means that throughout the day, throughout practice, coaches are holding these guys accountable. Like, okay, you may not have played for a week, but we're still coming to you. You're still a part of this team. You still matter. That's the only way guys stay ready. Because if you're just an average bench player, your mind might drift off. The coaching staff may not pay that much attention to the 12 guy on the bench. So when I see guys come in, Marcus Smart, when I see guys like Ajile, Terry Rozier, who had to be behind Kyrie Irving all year, when I see them step in and not miss a beat, that shows me, okay. The environment, the atmosphere, the mantra around that team is, yo, everybody's here to handle business. And in the game Monday night, you saw that. A bunch of pit bulls harassing Bellinelli, J.J. Redick. Marcus Smart was in these guys' ass. Shots that were open in the first series versus the Miami Heat, they weren't open Monday night. And listen, the 76ers played a tough series versus the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat don't have half the athletes the Boston Celtics have. Half. So if you were in an up-and-down series against the Miami Heat, man, you went for a long one with the Celtics. When you got Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, the Morris boy, Ajile, Terry Rozier, all of them guys on the wing, up in your ass, ready to defend, ready to come at you on the offensive end as well. It's going to be a long series. And as great as Ben Simmons is, he's a little bit offensively challenged. He'll get to the rim and he'll dunk the ball. He'll get on a fast break. But in a half-court set, he's not somebody that could summon a basket on demand. They only have one player like that, and that's Joel Embiid. So he's going to have to carry a heavy load this series. And honestly, I don't think he can do it. Because even though the Celtics don't have a mega talent out there right now, their scheme allows them to produce a quality basket or a quality shot whenever they want. They always get an open three or a mid-range shot or a nice cut to the lane. So collectively, as an organization, as a unit, as a team, they operate as if they have a great player. Because on demand, yo, we can get a good shot if we want. The Sixers can't do that. The Sixers have to just hope and pray that Embiid is amazing. The Sixers have to hope and pray that Ben Simmons could get out on the break and make something happen. They can't come out in a half-court set and just on demand get what they want. So that's going to be interesting for sure. For sure. The Boston Celtics got to the second round by extinguishing the Milwaukee Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks played a tough series going to Game 7. They have a phenomenal young player, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Yo, Giannis got what you want, man. He got what you want. What's most important in a great player is the mentality. You know, we've seen talents come through the league. There's a list of talented players, but the great ones have the mentality of, yo, you will not deny me. You will not stop me. And we saw that from Giannis. You see that long-ass Euro step from damn near the three-point line. And he was definitely trying to will his team to victory. Chris Middleton played well, knocking down threes the whole series. But again, I thought that the Celtics would just too great of an overall team for the Milwaukee Bucks. But with Giannis, I think he's also a little bit offensively challenged. They need to be able to just dump the ball to him in the middle on that little box and him come up with a basket time and time again. Whether that's just the baby hook, you know, a la Tim Duncan, or if he turns around and faces up with the triple threat. You know, little jab step. If the defender's backed up, you shoot over him. If he plays you too close, you go right around him and dunk it. He doesn't have that in his game, and I thought that's the reason they weren't able to pull it off. But if he has that, the future is definitely bright. What else are we going to get into with the Western Conference right now? I think we just waiting it out for the Houston Rockets to match up with the Golden State Warriors. Houston Rockets are facing the Jazz. The Jazz have no shot. Listen, when all of their players are in place, they have to play perfect to just compete with the Rockets. Their margin of error is so small. But they don't have their point guard rookie Rubio. He's going to be out for 10 days. So they got no shot. They got no shot. Donovan Mitchell, great year. Hopefully you win Rookie of the Year, but this is where it stops for you. And the same with the New Orleans Pelicans versus the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors are a well-oiled machine. The Pelicans don't have enough offensive power to hang with them. It goes back to Anthony Davis is amazing, yes. But he's working extremely hard to get a little basket. Meanwhile, on the other end, the Golden State Warriors, Klay Thompson has hit 3 three-pointers in 40 seconds without even dribbling the ball. It's hard to compete and contend with that. And that series should be over real soon. But it's good to see Jrue Holiday back. It just shows Jrue Holiday, the guard for the New Orleans Pelicans. It just shows how real life can affect these players. Jrue Holiday used to play for the 76ers. He was an all-star. Thought he was a guy on the rise. Then he went to New Orleans, and things kind of stalled. He didn't seem as as formidable of a player, but we learned things were happening on the outside. His wife had a tumor. Meanwhile, while she had a tumor, she had a baby as well. So that's got to be draining. You know, when things like that happen, that puts basketball in a perspective. But his family seems to be doing well now, and you see him back on the court making things happen. Shoot, he tore up Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum in that first round. And not only did he play well, but you can see it, and he's talking to the crowd. He's excited. The high fives are back. We didn't see that over the last couple of years. So shout out to Jrue Holiday, man, getting back on that horse and back to playing great basketball. I want to jump to this NFL draft for a bit. I don't know what to make of the draft. You know, I don't know the difference between that left tackle from LSU versus the inner linebacker from Alabama. I'm sorry, I'm not that versed in football. But what I do know is that the New York Giants fan base was mighty excited about drafting Saquon Barkley from the Penn State. Truly happy. I want to get excited too. But again, I don't know what to think of these draft picks. And I don't think the NFL does either. I looked back at some of the greatest runners. Kareem Hunt, he was the rookie from Kansas City. Le'Veon Bell, Pittsburgh Steelers, LeSean McCoy. These guys are late round draft picks. The NFL has conditioned me to make me believe that, yo, I could get a running back off the street. The Arizona Cardinals had the boy David Johnson. He's not a number two pick. He's not a number two pick. So the NFL has just, I'm a little gun shy. Can I get excited about Saquon Barkley? I don't know. It's kind of like with the MLB. The MLB has conditioned me. Every time I see somebody hitting monster home runs, I'm supposed to think steroids. With the NFL, when I see a great running back, or when I see somebody drafted high, I don't know what to think of him. Even with Ezekiel Elliott, the Dallas Cowboys. Okay, he was a high draft pick. He did great things. He was running fantastically. But then the experts say, oh, because he had a great line. So again, I don't know what to think. The Browns drafted Baker Mayfield. They say he's too short. He's this and that. Russell Wilson, the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks, he was short. He had all of those negative measurables that typically weren't drafted. But we saw him go out and be a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And I think that has given teams the green light to draft players like Baker Mayfield. I think Russell Westbrook's success has a direct impact on teams willing to pulling a trigger on drafting dudes like Baker Mayfield. So, is he going to be a bust? I see people on TV arguing for hours. Is he going to be good? Is he going to be a bust? Man, nobody knows a damn thing. At the end of all of that draft coverage, they should say, you know what? We should qualify our coverage because Joe Montana, possibly the greatest quarterback, we let him get drafted in the third round. Tom Brady, possibly the greatest quarterback ever, we let him get drafted in the sixth round. So nobody knows a damn thing. I did want to say this one thing about the Cleveland Browns. I've been studying business, trying to figure out or try to see what makes businesses great, whether it's Apple, whether it's Nike, it's Starbucks. And one thing I see is that good organizations have great people at all levels. And there's a continuity. Everybody is on the same page. They're not in conflict. The promotions department is not in conflict with the marketing or the sales or the quality control. Everybody's on the same page. So the Browns, when they were going to draft their first pick, the general manager did not tell the head coach. So you don't even have to understand sports to get this. You got a business, because these NFL franchises are business. You got the owner, and he's the owner. Under him is the general manager, and then under him is the coach. Three levels of management. It would behoove that team if everybody was working in unison. But the Browns so damn dysfunctional, the general manager neglected to tell his head coach. Crazy, I know. So the general manager is going to pick somebody that may not work with the head coach's plans. Shoot, if you're going to do that, just fire the head coach, damn it. So we get on these players year after year that come through the Browns, Jabril Peppers, Hayden. We say all these guys suck. But these organizations suck too. It's a reason that they're always number one, two, three in the draft pick. That dysfunction highlights why the San Antonio Spurs are okay. Because everybody's in place. R.C. Buford, Greg Popovich, all on one page. The Miami Heat, Mickey Arison, Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra, all on one page. So we'll see, man. The freaking Browns. That was crazy. I couldn't believe it. The head coach wasn't in. And when they asked the general manager why he didn't let his head coach know that who he was drafting, the general manager said, man, my wife doesn't even know who I'm drafting. Who gives a hell if your wife doesn't know? Does she work for the Browns? Is she the one that's going to have to put a offense in place for this quarterback? No. So that silly comment just highlights how silly that freaking franchise is. What else we got here going on? Yo, did you guys see that Dez Bryant had a contract offer? Dez Bryant had a contract offer. The Baltimore Ravens offered him 2 years at $10 million. You know what Dez said? Dez said, no thanks. Now, 2 years at $10 million at this point of the season is good. Free agency is over. The NFL draft is in place. So most teams have already filled all of their roster spots, all of their needs. So to get 2 years at $10 million at this point, I thought was quite impressive. You know, Dez Bryant was just recently cut by the Cowboys. And when he was cut, if you remember, he said, yo, I'm going to see the Cowboys twice a year. In order to see the Cowboys twice a year, he has to play in the same NFC East. So that leaves him only three options to go to: the New York Giants, the Philadelphia Eagles, or the Washington Redskins. There's a proverb out there that says, while seeking revenge, dig two graves, one for yourself. Dez Bryant is hell-bent on getting back at the Cowboys. Bro, you about to cost yourself money. You worrying about getting back at them. You about to cut off your nose to spite your face. So if those three teams know that, hey, Dez wants to play the Cowboys twice a year and there's only three options, guess what? They can lowball you. They can lowball you, man. If you want to get after Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett and that whole Dallas Cowboys brain trust, if you want to get back at them, the best way you could do is be successful overall, brother. If next year, February 2019, you are hoisting the Lombardi Trophy, no matter what team you play for, that would be the best revenge you could get against Jason Garrett. So trying to go in there two times a year, I hope Dez gets past that. I really, really do. But to Dez's credit, he said he wants a one-year deal so he can prove to the NFL he still has it and then possibly get one last payday. Okay, to his credit. But I don't believe it. I think he's more hell-bent on playing these guys twice a year. We'll see. What other stories came out of the NFL draft? Did you see the kid Shaquem Griffin get drafted? Shaquem Griffin, the player from the University of Central Florida. Now, it's no big deal. A bunch of kids got drafted this past weekend, right? What makes his story special? What makes his story special is that he only has one freaking hand. One hand. Kid is playing in the NFL with one hand. That's truly impressive. That is amazing. I like to see stories like that because it always paints the picture to me that, dang, well, whatever trials and tribulations you're going to, it could always be worse. You know, you got all your limbs, you're relatively healthy. It could always be worse. So that gives me no motivation to get up and keep pushing. And with guys like Shaquem Griffin, and I saw this in the Ray Charles movie also, in order for them to be successful, because in a Ray Charles movie, his mother said to him, even though you're going blind, boy, I ain't going to let you be no cripple. You know, it takes the people around them to push them and treat them and hold them to the same standards as everybody else. You know, Shaquem Griffin goes back to when he was a young boy. If his brother and his dad was out back lifting weights, his dad would say, boy, get your ass out here and you're going to lift these weights too. I'm not going to treat you any differently. And I like that message because it tells us, especially these young kids, yes, it's the chips can be stacked against you. It can be harder because of your race, because of your sex, because of your disability. But you still got to push them to be great. And that's truly amazing. He was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks, and he will be able to go to camp and play with his twin brother, Shaquem Griffin. So I look forward to that story, man. That is a great story. A not-so-great story that came out of the draft was Wyoming quarterback Josh Allen. Josh Allen was drafted by the Buffalo Bills. Prior to the draft, it came out that Josh Allen and his Twitter account, he has some racially insensitive tweets. Tweets that contain the word nigga. Tweets that said, if it ain't white, it ain't right. Now, the media is saying, well, he's just a kid. Let him go. Me personally, words don't affect me. I mean, people do make mistakes as youth. That is who I am. That is what I believe all the time. But my issue is with the media's coverage and who they pick and choose to give a pass to. When they pick and choose to have compassion. Right? So you want to give this guy Josh Allen a pass. Because he was a kid. Well, in a country where we sentence minors to life in prison, I have a problem with the rest of the world giving the man a pass for his tweets because he was a kid. See, in this country, we sentence minors. We say, hey, I know you're a kid. I know you're not fully developed. But we're going to give you adult consequences. Right? So if that is the standard in this country, why should Josh Allen get a pass? Because y'all like him? Now, should Josh Allen go to jail? No. But what I'm saying is, whatever punishment he would have faced had he tweeted that as an adult, he should face it for those tweets he did when he was a teenager. Now, that might just be the public embarrassment of shaming him. That might be loss of sponsorship. Teammates need to definitely go see him in the locker and say, yo, what's this about? But I just have a problem with the media not covering it as harshly or as deeply as they have done other things. Shoot, Jameis Winston stole some crab legs and they still won't let him get by. They still won't let him get by. But you want to protect Josh Allen and the Villanova kid, DiVincenzo. Why is that? Is it a race thing? Is it a class thing? I don't know, man. I don't like that. It reminds me of the Peyton Manning situation when Peyton Manning flashed his genitals to a trainer. Oh, he was a kid. Okay. But the media was soft on him because everybody liked his daddy. No, the media needs to go after everybody unbiasedly. And Josh Allen called Stephen A. Smith at 2 o'clock in the morning to explain his side. Y'all love Stephen A. Watched him years and years. He's provided plenty of entertainment. I've had the privilege of meeting him. But who makes him the authority on all black matters? You say something to Stephen A. and that absolves you of your sins? That sound contrived. Okay, let's go to the loudest black man with the biggest platform. That'll get us off the hook. That don't sound genuine and pure. I just don't like it, man. It reminds me of that situation with the Stanford swimmer. A blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy caught penetrating some woman unconsciously against her will. And the judge says, he's a kid. Sentenced him to 6 months. He only ended up serving 3. Now, if a kid in my neighborhood was to do some dumb stuff, they want to try him as an adult. The inconsistency is what I have a problem with. But we'll see, man. We'll see. Again, you're listening to WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. Please hit me on Twitter at WBH Radio. Almost done here. A few more things I wanted to get into. Did you see this love affair that the world is having with rap star Meek Mill? ESPN is doing stories about him. The Philadelphia 76ers had him sitting courtside, had him ring the bell before the game. Patriots owner Robert Kraft went to visit him in jail. 76ers owner picked him up in a helicopter and brought him to the Sixers game. Since when did everybody become a Meek advocate and a Meek fan? A few years ago, y'all were crushing him because he lost to Drake. Let me tell you what my issue with this is. So, Meek Mill, he violated parole. He went to jail. Everybody thought it was unjust. Then you see guys like Robert Kraft and the 76ers on, I forget his name, they try to jump on the bandwagon. Now, is it pure love? Are they really about justice reform? Or, and this is what I think, Meek Mill is a safe opportunity to ingratiate yourself with the black community. You know, as the world becomes divided on the Kaepernick, on Donald Trump, rich white men like Robert Kraft say, you know what, this is safe. I could get behind this. So they actually using Meek as a prop. Like, look, Black America, we're with you guys. But that's not true. Because whether you love him or hate him, Meek is a convicted felon. Colin Kaepernick didn't break not one damn law. How come, Robert Kraft, you're not fighting for him to get a job? He didn't break not one damn law. Why don't you help Kaepernick? He's doing a lot of great things in the black community. He's trying to fight prejudices and biases and trying to overcome hurdles like inconsistent justice system. Why don't you help him and his movement? Because that's not safe. But Meek Mill, many believe that, he just went to jail because he popped a willy. So let's get behind him. The 76ers owner flew him in a helicopter. Why? Because he's safe. Oh, snap. This Negro won't really cost us anything without constituents. So let's go jump over there, help him get out of jail. He just went to jail for popping a willy. Okay. Yeah, safe stuff. Meanwhile, Kaepernick's still out there. Meanwhile, other folks are getting gunned down in the street. But you won't get behind that stuff. Because it's too scary. It's a little bit deeper than just Meek Mill popping a willy. And another piece to this puzzle that makes me uncomfortable. The lawyer in the Meek Mill case is a black woman. Now, when we talk about minorities, black women are on the bottom of the totem pole. Because not only do they get it because of their race, but they are there because of their sex as well. Now, I just find it interesting that rich, powerful white men like Robert Kraft feel comfortable speaking against the law or denouncing the law when we have a black female judge involved. See, because she's probably not somebody that is one of your cronies. She's probably not somebody that shares the same country club or golfs with your people or has the same political connect as your people. So she's easy to just throw to the side. It's no problem if she's collateral damage. because y'all don't run in the same circle. Now, if the judge was a white male, if he was one of your people, somebody that you might run into at the golf course or at the political functions, or who is so-and-so's son who went to school with this guy's son, if he was somebody in your group, would you feel as comfortable speaking out against their ruling? See, that piece makes me really uncomfortable. The first time we heard Robert Kraft or the 76ers owner say something or do something of any significance or consequence, they're doing it, A, with a safe rapper who all he did was Papa Willie, and then two, they're speaking out against a black female judge. So I don't know, man. You guys tell me. You tell me. I think that's all I got for this week. Think that's all I got. Oh, let me jump into this NCAA stuff. The NCAA put together a commission. It's led by Condoleezza Rice. And they made some recommendations for the NCAA last week. And I'm not going to get into all of them, but one of them that did catch my attention is the NCAA, is the rule of the one and done basketball player. The commission said, hey, the NBA needs to get rid of this one and done rule. If the player is good enough to go to the NBA, let him go. But if he wants to go to college, let him come for 3 years. Similar to the NCAA baseball rule. Now, I found this fascinating because Condoleezza Rice pointed out, hey, that one and done rule is an NBA rule. That's not the NCAA's. It's the NBA that is holding these young men back, not us. If they're Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, let them go to the NBA. Don't send them to the NCAA. The NCAA is doing just fine with DiVincenzo's and freaking Jalen Brunson's. We're going to make our money. And I thought Condoleezza Rice did a good job of highlighting, yo, that's the NBA. Stop putting that on us. And that NBA rule was put in place not for the protection of the kids. No. Nobody does anything out of the kindness of their heart. That rule was put in place to protect the NBA owners from their goddamn self. Because for every Kobe Bryant and LeBron James that skipped high school, there's a whole bunch of high school kids that came through that got paid but weren't worthy. Players that hijacked NBA franchises for years but weren't worthy. You got to protect these silly ass owners from going to small town USA, seeing a high school player and falling in love with him and wanting to throw the Brinks truck up for him. That's what the one and done rule was about. Like, hold on, NBA owners, let's see if these kids can really play. Because these owners didn't have the discipline to really scout and see, dang, who's going to be who. They had the foresight to see who's really going to be a star. They just saw a few highlight tapes and said, oh, snap, give me that kid at any cost. So they start drafting high school kids like it was nothing. You got a bunch of Stromile Swifts in there and Kwame Browns. So good job by the NCAA. Many people might not be a fan of Condoleezza Rice, but that commission has some good people over there, to include David Robinson and Grant Hill. When those guys are talking basketball in the NCAA, I'm going to listen. Because those are two people that did it on both levels. And I think they benefited from being student athletes. Grant Hill, two national championships. He went on to have a Hall of Fame basketball career. He also did great things in business. He made Feli come to the NBA. We ain't seen Feli since. He is the part owner of the Hawks. David Robinson was prepared to join our United States Navy and make $18,000 a year. So I think these are versatile gentlemen with many different interests, different insights, perspectives. So when they talk of NCAA basketball and how we could change it and how we can make it work for everybody, I'm listening to those two guys. But yo, that's my show. My name is William Holly. You're listening to WBH Radio. Please hit me on Twitter @WBH Radio. I'll be back next Wednesday. We out.